This interview is brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. You can check out the full episode at lickinonlending.com.
Folks, I am excited to have a top producer in the industry with us. Many people are struggling to get business in the door. This young man, of course, I'm 68 years old, so everyone's young compared to me, everyone. But this young man is here, and he is knocking the cover off the ball and growing his business. Please welcome Shashank to the podcast. Shashank, good to have you here, friend.
Hey, it's an honor, Dave. I'm a huge fan of you. I've been following you for a long time, and I'm just very, very excited to be on this podcast.
Well, I'm excited to have met you in person. I really got to meet you and get to know you when we were together last week in Philadelphia at the AIM conference, which is the Excellent Origination Workshop, I think is what it was.
Yes, Originator Excellence Workshop, yes.
Thank you. But what I was so impressed about, Shashank, that you do really well is you connect with consumers through publications, through writing, and your blog. And we're going to get into that. But before we do, let's let our listeners just get to know you. You're going to quickly figure out that you have an Indian accent, an East Indian accent. So you have that as your background. Talk about it. How did you come to America? How is it that you got in the mortgage industry? And tell us a little bit about your journey.
Sure, of course. I came here in 2006. I was working for a company in India, and they got me transferred here in Silicon Valley, where I am even now. And I was head of business for them, actually a mortgage business, which was VC funded, but I wasn't into origination. I was just managing the business. And then, as we all know, what happened in 2007 and early 2008 is there came a time when the president of the company said, hey, we have to close down the shop. The VCs have stopped funding the business. And I was, a year and a half, less than 2 years in the country back then. And I'm thinking to myself, is like, okay, the only thing that I know to do here in America is probably do mortgages. And maybe I should do mortgage. And my wife was like, oh, you need to go back and find a real job because I'm going to be in marketing. Yeah. So I have the qualification. I had the experience even back in India. I was working for GE Consumer Finance, and I was a manager for them and marketing major in MBA. I could have gotten what she called a real job, but I always thought, Davey, when I was in business school, that one day I'll start a company of my own. And I thought that this is probably the right time. And if I don't do it now, I go back to corporate world and I get like 40 year old. And eventually I'm like, I have too much of liability, too much of pressure to think of starting on my own. And I just dived right in. I knew it was 2008. I wasn't blind to where the industry was because I was in the industry, was the head of a business for another company at that time. But I personally saw it as a great opportunity. I saw that about 60-65% of the industry was leaving the business at that time. And I knew that short term, it might not work out, but let's give it a shot. And who knows, a couple of years from now, I could have that advantage that I was one of those remaining 30-40%. So that's how I got started, really in the kitchen table of my rented apartment with about $2,000 in capital, three people in terms of connections, and less than 2 years in the country.
Wow. That there's something about those stories where someone comes in and recognizes from another country and recognizes an opportunity. And seeing as you only knew mortgages, it's logical how you get there. But you did have some exposure. You had a great education. And then, of course, you were with the Consumer Finance Division of GE. So you had some foundation there. But it takes work. And not just anyone can get in there and do this. And, folks, I want you to be aware of this. Listen to these numbers. Shashank, not originates, closes 25-plus transactions per month with an average loan amount of $500,000. Do the math. That's $150 million in loan originations he funds personally each year. He is president and CEO and mortgage broker and lender and loan officer, everything for Arcus Lending, Inc. I forgot to mention that. Shashank, how in the heck are you originating 25 transactions a month in this market and growing?
So, yes, of course. As in growing is probably the key word here, because if you're not growing, then you'll become stagnant, and then you will start actually degenerating, as you will probably have lower numbers as the years go by, especially given in a competitive market. So also, Dave, note that I'm in San Jose, California. Probably the most competitive market in the country. It's definitely one of the most competitive. Everybody and their uncles and aunts want to originate in this market, given how the ticket size is. So your question about how do I originate $150 million, it's really, there's no one answer to it. But I think that as a loan officer, as a broker, as a manager, whatever you are in the mortgage industry, if you're on the origination side of it, really there are only three problems you're trying to solve. And if you solve it, you could do 150 or even more. And those three problems are, number one, how do you get more people to call, email, basically contact you? So that's what I call lead generation. How do you generate more leads? And then the second problem you're trying to solve is that the number of leads that are coming in, how do you convert more? So how do you get more and more people to actually end up working with you, closing the loan with you? And then the final problem that you're trying to solve is that out of those converted clients, how do you get them to keep coming back to you, not just for themselves, but also refer their friends and family to you? If you really break it down at a very, very simple form, you are in a business of lead generation, lead conversion, and then generating more and more referral business. And that's how I looked at it, this business, very, very early, is that, look, it's not as complicated as it might seem. And if I can figure out the solutions to these three problems, I could become a big producer. And that's what I have focused on, even at current production volume, which, by the way, the first year I did 2.8 million. And then in about seven years, I was doing 175 million. So it's a very, very steep climb. In fact, the growth was so much, Dave, that my company, Arcus Lending, was named to the Inc. 500 list, which is the 500 fastest growing private companies in America. And there are like almost, 6 million private companies. To be named in the top 500 with almost 1,000% growth in 3 years is just crazy. But that's what we did as a company. We were able to do that is because I was able to solve those three problems to the point that where we could grow the business that quickly to that level.
Those three, again, quickly, are lead generation, how to get business coming to you, converting it, number two, and then turning that into repeat business. And in a world, what really was fascinating to me about your story that I heard really up close and personal last week in Philadelphia at the AIM event is everyone's talking about video. Video, video, video. Everyone's got to produce videos, and I see a place for that. I happen to agree with you. I think it's more of a B2B play, business-to-business play, but what you're doing is through blogs. You are a mortgage expert and blogger, and you've been doing this for a number of years.
Yes.
First of all, how did you start getting into that? Was it accidental? Are you just a natural writer? I sit down at a blank sheet of paper going to write something, and I have got that writer's blank. It's starting, once I get momentum going, I seem to be able doing all right, but it's getting that going. So talk about your journey into blogging and why is it working so effectively for you on lead generation?
So again, I came into the business in 2008, and very soon I realized, and Dave, you mentioned that I have a good education background. I've worked for a Fortune 500 company in the past. So I had all that experience, and I was running the business for that mortgage company, which was a VC-funded company, by the way. So when you listen to that kind of background, and I told myself the same story, is that, look, I understand business, and I can run it. And the moment I started Arcus Lending, I realized how wrong I was, because I knew all the macroeconomic factors, and I can lecture you about all that stuff, but the most important job of a business is to get clients. Because if you don't have
if
you don't have the money coming in, it does not matter whether you did MBA or you were a CEO or whatever happened in your past life is really comes to nothing. And I very quickly realized that what a huge mistake I had made in terms of understanding and planning, because here I was knowing pretty much everything I had to know, but I had no clue how to get a client. And given the fact that I was less than 2 years in the country and I literally knew no one here because, of course, I did not go to college here. I don't have any relatives that live here. And I was really struggling to find clients. And so, and that's why I said in the entire first year, first 12 months of starting the business, I closed 7 transactions. That's like, half a loan a month. And then I realized that I was then looking at the industry. Hey, what are other loan officers doing to get the business? And I saw that they were going to these real estate events or something and trying to sponsor events or talk to realtors, and I'm talking to these guys, and I'm like, this is a very difficult channel to get business from. One, that they themselves don't probably have any business. And two, that they have 10 other people saying the same thing. Hey, I'm a loan officer. I offer great rates and great service and send business to me. And I figured out that's something that's not going to work for me. It will take me years to get business from these guys, if at all they will ever give me business. And I decided pretty much in the first, I would say, first 6 to 12 months of the business is that I have to build a platform where instead of me going to people asking for business, I would want them to come to me and say, hey, I want to do business with you, Shashank.
That is, without question, the way to do that.
Yeah.
Talk about how you got to that place where you found out what you couldn't do well, you wouldn't do well, or wouldn't work for you, whatever, but you did find a way that did start working. And how long did it take you to discover that? And was it a proof of concept? Was it instinct that came to you? I mean, how did you come to blogging?
Sure. So what I started looking at, Dave, was that is what's the next generation of, I would say, media consumption? Where are the future buyers going? And I saw that 2009 was still relatively new for social media. Facebook was just about coming up. And of course, personally, me as a consumer, I was reading more and more blogs instead of, say, reading newspapers or anything. And I found out that there were very few originators in the country. I would probably say less than 10, if I remember, who were actively blogging. And I saw that as a huge opportunity for me. I wouldn't say I'm a natural writer. I did, again, I've studied English literature during my college years. So I had some background, but we did not do too much of writing. It was mostly reading literature and then answering questions in the test. There was very little writing I did. Again, even with writing, I quickly realized that I was really bad at it. If you read some of my first blog post, I cringe reading it. But I have left it
so
there
funny.
just to keep that for reference sake that, hey, you can go from here to here. But I started
That's
writing
so good.
Blogs. And I was writing one every week, and it took me 6 months of writing every single week. So that's what, 25 blog posts, until the first person called me and said, hey, I just found your blog post online. And I literally just fell off my chair. Like, where did you find me again? Like, did you find me online? I'm like, somebody finally found that blog post I've been writing all these months. And that's also a lesson to anyone listening to this, is that any major media platform, and most of the things actually in our industry, takes months before it starts to bear fruit. And a lot of us, because I also taught a lot of blogging classes, and most people would come to me after 2-3 months and say, hey, this thing does not work. I've been writing it for like 2 months or 3 months. It does not, because they are not dying to read your post. You need to show up somewhere for them to read it. So two lessons. One is that, of course, you need to keep at it. Two is that any new strategy takes a few months before it starts to show results. So again, keep at it. And then, I started getting some calls from the customers who saw me. But also, I got a call from an editor at Yahoo News, Yahoo Finance, who was doing a news on mortgages. And he said, hey, I found your blog post and I would like to quote you. So it wasn't just the consumers who were finding it after, say, 6 to 9 months. Even some of the media channels were finding it. And that's where my exposure into being covered into media started around that time.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's the initial journey on that.
Well, not only do you start writing blogs, but now you have a bestseller book out there. Talk about that.
Yeah, so once I started writing blogs, I have a friend in industry, actually, and he recommended that, why don't you just put these blog posts together and make a book out of it? Because that'll, of course, make it sound way more credible. And I'm still thankful to Tim Davis. A big shout out to you, man, is that he was the one who gave me that idea. And he said he gave that idea to like 20 people, and I was the only one who actually ended up writing it.
Wow.
So another takeaway is that execution is very important in our business. You can have all the ideas in the world, or somebody will give you those ideas if you go to events like, say, we went to in Philly, but you are the one who will implement it. And thankful that I am to Tim is that I actually went on and started working on it and got my first book out called First Time Home Buying 101. And that was a game changer, really. As real estate agents wanted to work with me, I had positioned myself as a first-time home buyer expert. And that book solidified that perception and that branding in the local market that, look, he's not just saying he's a first-time home buyer expert. He writes blogs on that topic, and he has actually written a book. It was a self-published book, but really it's not important who is publishing it. What is important is that you have a paperback to show for. You can actually give a copy to your clients, to your prospects, to your realtors, and especially back in 2008, 2010, again, I don't know if anyone who had written a book in the industry geared towards consumers at that time.
Not familiar or aware of it.
Yes,
there's some a lot of books written to the mortgage professional and how to do that. One of the ones that I contributed to, and I think it's the best, one of the best, it's a 3-book volume, The Mortgage Professional Handbook. Jess Letterman put that together, a good friend, and it's a great resource. But again, to the mortgage industry, but not to the consumers. And that's what was really needed. And it really touched on a demographic, a growing demographic, and the first-time home buyers. You know, the first-time home buyers, 35% of all originations in 2017, 2018, it's rising. 2019 and 20, we're going to see that to get to be 50% or more of that. So I think you've did a brilliant job, but you've also written out more books. Talk about those other books that you've written and where people can find them and buy them.
Absolutely. And briefly before that, what you mentioned is very, very important, Dave, is to figure out your segmentation and targeting. And I was very intentional about it. Some people would think that it just happened. It did not. I was very careful in figuring out where the market is heading. Who do I, because I was in the same age group as the first-time homebuyers was. I was talking their language. I was in Silicon Valley where a lot of immigrants were coming who were trying to buy their first home. So I could identify with those people. So it was, again, very intentional. Whichever market you are in, figure out where your talent, where your background, where your expertise come in and what kind of segmentation, and then try to target that market. You will be immensely and hugely more successful than just trying to
create an
approach of trying to work with everyone. So the second book happened, I had this really big speaker on the real estate circuit. She was the president of two large real estate companies, and she and I spoke at few platforms, and she was almost 75, 80 at that time. And she was like, one of my last wishes is to write a book. Would you co-author it with me? And for me, again, that was a game changer because she used to speak literally every week at different kind of real estate platforms.
Wow.
And she personally probably sold 10,000 copies of it through all these seminars and conferences that she did. But everywhere, of course, anyone who got that book, and these were all 80% real estate agents, they were getting these books and they were like, it's me, as Shashank and Carol, who wrote the book together. And so they would send me pictures of the book saying, hey, I just saw your book here. And I got a lot of real estate connections, real estate agent connections through it. So again, very, very successful. And then last year, I wrote my first home because I thought first-time home buying 101 was outdated. Things have changed a lot in the last, say, 8-9 years. I have learned a lot consulting hundreds of first-time home buyers buy their first home. I put all that experience together into my first home, which became a number one bestseller on Amazon. It was featured on Times Square in New York. It has now won awards at San Francisco, LA, New York, several book festivals.
Wow.
I don't remember all of that stuff. So, yeah, very, very successful. Some of the critics have called it the best book ever written for first-time homebuyers. But more importantly, again, from the branding angle and from the point that every pre-approval that we do now, we hand them a copy of my paperback, is that's one of the reasons why we get 90% of our pre-approved clients converted into closing. It's just an amazing stat, and the book actually plays a huge part in that.
Okay, so you've got books, you've been blogging. Now bring it to the practical. How did the phone start ringing? You found out after doing it first of all, you set a key, which I agree with. It's like this podcast. It took years for it to really get traction. But once it's gotten that, now we're well-known in the industry, probably better known for this podcast than anything else we've done. And we've done significant things. But it takes time to convert them. And then there is a process to convert these people that are showing interest or reading it. How have you actually turned your blog posts and your books into actual loan applications?
There are actually 3 reasons you should blog. One of the most common mistakes that I see with creating, say, blogs or even books is that most people think or assume that the only reason you should do it is because of lead generation, that you need to get new applications. And if this what you're doing is not fulfilling that need, then it's not working. For me, surprisingly, I wasn't even focused on that in the beginning because I was realistic and knew that you can't write a blog post today and it goes on page 1 of Google tomorrow. It's not going to happen that way. So in the beginning, I was like, okay, all these realtors that I speak to, and even if they send me 1 or 2 loans or this 5 loan that I've done and they are sending me referrals, and if they are looking me online, what are they finding there? And so for me in the beginning, it was more like, okay, if I'm getting 5 leads and they can read my blog post and they can think that this guy must be an expert to write all that stuff and all 5 end up working with me, For me, that's big enough because I'm only a year in the industry, and most people will say, hey, I don't want to work with this guy. He's very new. He's very inexperienced. But they read all these blog posts, and they're like, no, he might be inexperienced, but he knows his stuff and would rather work with me. So my first goal of blogging was conversion. It was saying that whatever little number of leads that I'm getting from these people, I need to convert it 100% because I do not have a big top funnel. I don't have 100 people coming in. I only have like a one a week or two a week, and I need to convert that. And my blogging is an expertise platform that I need to show to these guys. So anytime they would come to me, I'll find an excuse for me to direct them to my blog post. Hey, you have a question like this, or you're thinking about this? Here, read my blog post that I wrote about it. And some of the blog posts were so common, like five factors that impact credit score, that literally everyone in the country wants to know. Hey, what are those five factors that impact credit score?
Yep.
So in the beginning, I wrote all those generic posts that pretty much every buyer would want to know about those topics. So I would direct them to that, and I had nearly 100% conversion even back then, which is thankfully continued till now. But that's where it served its first purpose. And then, as I said, once I wrote for about 6 months, started showing on Google results where people would call me and then they would work with me, almost entirely sold already because they had read my blog post and they were kind of convinced that I want to work with this guy. And that's why even from the beginning, my entire business wasn't in the local area where I am in the San Francisco Bay Area. I was doing a lot of business, for example, in Southern California even back then because people were finding my blog post and they were calling me. And once you get some of those people to work with you, then of course, as I said, the third part of the business, which is, again, I was focused from day one to get more referrals from my very first client. The first seven clients that I closed in my very first 12 months probably are worth over $200,000 each for me now because of the number of referrals that they have given me through the number of years. So that's how it started, yes.
So let's go. We've talked about getting the leads. We've talked about how you've converted them. You needed 100% because the leads weren't that many. You've got a great conversion. But talk about the repeat business. Number three, how did you solve number three? As once you had a client, you held on to them and got them to repeat. I think it's the number one problem in our industry. In theory, if you are in the business, you do reasonably, even just reasonably or moderately successful. No more after 2 to 3 years, no more than 5 years, you should never have to call on another realtor if you're doing and solving this third and final problem. Talk about that. How did you solve that?
That's the most important and valuable sentence ever spoken, which is if you are 5 years in the business, you should ideally have to never prospect again. I'm not saying you should not prospect. I'm saying ideally you don't need
to. That's right.
And why is that? Is because what we are talking about is that if you take good care of your clients, that's one part of the process, which is first make sure their experience is good. Because if they're not, you can do whatever you want and they will still not refer you business. But assuming that you're doing that already, and I'm hoping most of our listeners are already doing that, but once you have done that, then you kind of let it go. As I speak at several platforms or I talk to several loan officers and they are always asking me, hey, how do you get all this business? And they're always trying to find out there must be a silver bullet. As in, you can do 150 million just like that. Then you must have some secret source of sourcing these business that we don't know. And why don't you tell me what that secret source is? And I tell them I have nothing, really. And which is true is because what happens is that most people do not follow up with their clients, which should be their number one source of business. For me, even in second year, it was my number one source of business, even though I only had seven clients in my first 12 months. Those
Amazing.
Seven clients probably referred me 12 or 14 transactions. That in the second year, I did 32 loans. I clearly remember it. But out of those 32, almost 14, 16 came from those first seven clients that I closed. Thankfully, the rates dropped in that year. In 2009, and these were the same clients who were referring me business saying, hey, we'll go work with Shashank, the rates are low. So what I'm trying to say is, one is that don't make an excuse that you're new in the industry, you don't have the humongous customer database, and that's why you can't get referral business. I got it out of seven. The second is that, I don't have time to follow up with these people. Dude, those are your biggest and the easiest source of business that you can. And you can sometimes set it and forget it. Most of my follow-up comes from, say, a system like Top of Mind, where it's a five-year touch campaign. We send them, say, monthly interest rate update, yearly review, cards, whatever, a small gift when it closes. And every time that email blast goes out, we get a one or two application every single time, sometimes 10, depending on kind of blast is going out. But really, if you don't have time, first, again, if you're one, two, three, four, 5 years in the business with like 50 people in your database, texting one of them every day and then going back to them again, say after 3 months once you have exhausted your database, should be no problem at all. As in, don't make that an excuse. And then if you are bigger and if you have 500,000 people, then find a technology that will do it for you. You don't have to use the same platform that I do, but there are several other options that you can.
You're using top of mind. That's one of the, what is your tech stack, technology stack that you're using right now, just so people can have some insights? Again, I think it's great that you're saying you can use other, just use whatever you get one and use it. But what ones are you actually using?
So I'm only using top of mind. And then I just, other than that, I usually just text people. So every now and then I will like, okay, I was just thinking of you. Hey, how is it going? Or this is your birthday or whatever it is. It's like staying in touch in a personal way is all that's important. It's really not important to focus on the technology. I talk about it at all conferences and most
good
people
point.
Hate me for this. But what I'm saying is that a lot of us are really focused on, hey, you said send video. What do you use for video? You send text. What do you use for that? I have used Google Sheets for my pipeline management all these years. So
wow.
Technology is, because we are building our own technology platform, so it took us few years. But what I'm saying is that technology is a great enabler, great facilitator, absolute must in a year like 2019 and beyond. But if you don't have it for any reason, that's not an excuse to not become the best version of you or doubling your business. How difficult it is, say if you have 150 clients, okay? How difficult it is to text five of them every day, takes you 30 days, get back to them after 30 days, again saying, hey, just checking, how's your son doing, your daughter doing? Or you don't have to talk about mortgages. You don't have to ask for business. But if you text them four times a year.
Building a relationship.
Yeah. Text them four times a year. That's all it takes. So I don't care what technology you use because I don't use a ton of technology platforms. It's you could have your database in Excel for all we are talking about, but remaining in touch with them should be your number one source of business, whether you're number two or you're number 20 in the business.
Wow. There's so much good information in this interview already. People need to go back and listen to this over and over and over again. Shashank, we've run out of time. If people want to get a hold of you, what is the most effective way for people to reach you?
I think email is the fastest. It's shashank@arcuslending.com. That's S-H-A-S-H-A-N-K at A-R-C-U-S-Lending.com.
Encourage you to reach out, get to know Shashank. Brilliant young man, and hey, he's a winner. He's someone to be watching, folks. This, what he's doing in the industry as in relates to originations and running a business, providing leadership. And the best part, it's amazing what he's doing. But the best part, he's giving it away. He's helping others. And I think that's a hallmark of a real leader and a winner. It's helping others be successful. Shashank, thanks so much for coming onto the podcast today and sharing some of your ideas. It's encouraging, it's inspiring, and I definitely want to have you back again soon on the podcast.
Thank you, Dave. It's been an absolute pleasure and an honor to be on your podcast.
You just heard an audio clip from Lickin' On Lending, and here are the sponsors that make this show possible.
It's been ingrained in us since we were kids that every time someone says, thank you, you're supposed to say, you're welcome. It's expected. But what if I told you that your expected behavior is not building a bridge? One of the fundamental aspects of meaningful relationships is the understanding that you and your partner are in it together. So you help each other out with no need to expect gratitude for favors or services because you expect them to do the same for you someday. Instead of saying, you're welcome, simply say, hey, I know you do the same for me. This changes the dynamic of your relationship. It builds upon the science of reciprocity and implies that you now have the relationship where favors are freely exchanged. This is a minor change in your day-to-day communication, but the results could be huge. If it sounds too good to be true, it's not. It's just the science of sales.
I love that segment. Good job. Always love hearing that. And by the way, Scott's going to be our guest on the Hot Topic segment on February 18th next week. Looking forward to having him on. He's talking about educational content and some things that they're doing over at Open Mortgage. Very exciting.